Hi, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators, home to NARC troopers. If you are in the recovery journey from narcissistic abuse and a relationship with a disordered person, all of the resources are there for you to check them out at narctroopers.com. Today, I have a very special guest, and I'm very excited to welcome Shama. I'll let her pronounce her last name. She's a certified empowerment coach accredited by Jay Shetty and has been on mission since 2020. Her passion lies in guiding women through powerful transformations. And this is not to say that men are not welcome in this conversation as well, because everything that applies to one gender applies to all genders, and we have narcissists of all stripes. Shama's own journey is marked by a pivotal divorce, and it ignited a fire within her to empower others. And I think that has that effect with many of us. She firmly believes that the foundation of our lives lies in the relationship that we have with ourselves. So today, fueled by this newfound purpose, she's unwavering in her commitment to help people emerge as the architects of their own empowered destinies. I love that. Architects of their own empowered destinies. I will let you say your whole name, and I will tell listeners today that all of her contact information will be in the details underneath the description with today's podcast video, or however you may be watching this. So welcome, Shama.
Hi, Prajnita. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. And for the listeners, my name is Shama Singhi. So I know it's complicated. I know it's difficult to pronounce, but please try. It's okay with K silent.
Yes. You know, my name is even worse. The whole name is Prajin Satapitanon Pesqueda. That is quite a bit. I teach high school, and none of my students want to even try that. And so they just call me Miss P. Miss P. Okay, so today's topic is something that I think is something that's going to affect many of us, and especially with the holidays. It's very difficult to co-parent with a narcissist. And when you know that that's what you're dealing with, and you have children, that, you know, there's a whole lot of things that that complicate what is already a challenging role that you play as parent. It's already difficult enough, but then you add this other X factor, and it becomes a whole new thing. So I'll let you get started and talk a little bit about why and maybe how it's different to that of a normal parenting role, and what do we do when no contact is not an option? Because ideally, if we did not have children, we would just cut those ties that bind us, and we would go no contact and keep it that way. But we can't do that sometimes when we have children. So let's start there.
Hi, Prajnita. I think I lost you in between. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. Let's start with the part about co-parenting, how it looks different, what we can expect with that when we're co-parenting with the narcissist and we cannot go no contact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So like you said, it's already difficult to co-parent, you know, especially when you've had issues with your ex-partner. Obviously, there is a reason why you're not together. You know, probably your values don't align or your thoughts don't match. There's something obviously not right. So that is a challenge in itself. And then you add the element of being a narcissist or dealing with a narcissist. I think it just gets way too complicated. But for me, or for the person who is dealing with a narcissist, I think the real challenge comes when we've been in a relationship with a narcissist long enough. And I would say, when I say long enough, even 6 months to 1 year is long enough, because they have this ability of taking away your self-worth, your self-confidence, and just knocking it down. So what happens is we form a trauma bond. So people who are dealing with a narcissist, they form a trauma bond. And when you have to deal with them again, everything from your past, all the trauma from your past comes back. So your body is instantly into the flight or the fight mode, in which you're always trying to defend yourself. You're always trying to protect yourself. So let alone just simple co-parenting, but when you add the whole narcissism to this element, it just becomes way harder. It just becomes so difficult to think clearly, to act clearly, and to understand what is really happening.
Yes, I think that it's challenging because, you put your children's best interest first, and you know that the narcissist does not do that. They're not putting their children's best interest above their own. And so many times what you see is a dynamic where they're using those children's as pawns. They're using them as a source of supply and fuel for themselves. They use them to prop up their own grandiosity and feelings that they are have all the power and control, which is ultimately something that is very important to narcissists, to feel that they have that and that they're the ones that are, you know, at the wheel at all times, and that everyone else has to do what they say, including their ex-spouse. And they have them all jumping through loops and hoops and doing the little dance, you know, for them. And it's not really with the children in the forefront. So let's talk about that dynamic a little bit more. Maybe some of the things that can happen that can go off the rails when you're dealing with them. And one of the first things I'm going to suggest is a sort of modified no contact as a first go-to suggestion for co-parenting with a narcissist, is that if you can, whenever you can, avoid that face-to-face, voice-to-voice contact with them, because it's a very triggering thing for you, but it's just not healthy for anyone because they're not going to be working with you. You can pretty much assume that they're going to be working against you in insidious ways and in more obvious ways. That's probably what you're going to see. So if you can do some abbreviated form of that, where you find a third person, a friend or family member, where you can drop the kids off, and then the ex can pick up the children from that third party, so that there is no, you don't have to actually see them. Same thing with communications. Instead of calling and having to speak with them to make arrangements, negotiations, all of that kind of thing for birthday parties and holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, all of that that's upon us right now. Maybe find a different way through email so that you don't, it's just different when it's in writing. First of all, you have a paper trail in case you need to go to court with this. And secondly, things tend to get emotional and go off the rails when you're speaking with them live on the phone, or in some situation like that. I think that email sort of removes the emotions from the interaction so that you can negotiate those things through a conversation, but the conversation is in writing. That would be my first suggestion for people co-parenting to do that. So let's start there. What else do we have?
Yeah, just to add to that, Arjun, in my experience, I do not have the leisure to have friends and family around who could be the third party. So I had to deal with him directly. I still have to deal with him directly. But what I have found out is that they tend to bring the irrelevant things into the picture, the mudding of the picture. So like you said, they would like control over a situation, and they would go to any lengths to get control and to confuse you. I mean, the only way they can keep you is by confusing you. So what they do is they bring in a lot of stuff which is totally irrelevant to the here and now, to what you're trying to do, to what you're trying to achieve. In most of the cases, it's trying to achieve the contact smoothly. So contact with the children. So that has been my experience. And one of the things that you really, really have to be very good at is bringing clarity. So they muddy the water. You just have to pick up the really relevant point and just speak to it rather than trying to address everything else. Because what he's trying to do is get a response. He or she, sorry, is trying to get a response. And the minute you start responding to his irrelevant questions and remarks, he's winning the game.
I think that that's right. They do want to get emotional responses from the people they interact with. That's their thing, because that's the source of the fuel and supply. It comes from, you know, the food that feeds them and feeds their emptiness, is the reaction that they get from people in every context imaginable. Everything at work, at home, with their family, with your family, with your children together, with you, with their friends, with just everyone they know, that's how they feed. That's how they keep themselves propped up, is by manipulating the situation to get the desired response. And even if the response is your anger, or you're just, you know, crying or pleading or trying to reason with them, that is feeding them. That is fuel, and that is counterproductive for everyone. So I think you have a very valid point about trying to remain focused on, you know, if you have no situation that allows you to use that third party and you have no choice but to deal with them face to face, try to keep it short. Try to stay on point. Try to keep coming back to the point you're trying to resolve, and don't allow the conversation to go other places. Keep redirecting it and redirecting it back to the point. And if anything else is said, maybe just think of a statement like, this is irrelevant. Let's focus on what we're trying to solve here about Thanksgiving, about Christmas, or about visitations, about vacation time. Let's focus on that. And every time they go off the track, just bring them back, bring them back. I think that sometimes doesn't work, because here again, they know all of your buttons to push to get the reactions. And it's pretty, I mean, they know you, they've studied you, they know you better than you know yourself. So sometimes it's just, they do get their emotional response, and then things kind of fall apart after that. But that's a good point. That's called gray rock, when you show no emotional response. Just nothing. Just you show nothing. You're very matter of fact. You're not angry. You're not frustrated. You're not happy. You're not sad. No reaction. Just no emotion. Just put the shield down. Bring the mask on. You know, and put up that fortress around yourself for protection, and just psych yourself up for that before you have to face them. Then it's impenetrable. They see nothing. They get nothing from you, emotionally speaking, and that just shuts them down in a hurry. They don't know what to do with that. And, yeah, you know, it takes two people going like this to have these conversations with them. If you step away, it's very hard for them to do this by themselves.
Yeah.
And so I think that's... Go ahead.
I was saying, and don't get me wrong, I mean, when you talk about, you know, show no emotions, it doesn't mean we don't feel any emotions. I still do. Even after 8 years of co-parenting with him, I still feel a lot of emotions. There are times when I just want to put my hair apart. I was like, oh. But I think this is where, there are two things to this. First of all, your support system is very, very important. And what I found is, like, I've got my friends and I've got my mom. So what I will do is I'll just call up and scream and cry and howl, whatever I need to do. With my support system, with my accountability group, with my other coaches, etc. so that the emotions, I'm able to let out my emotions and I'm not able to show it to him. I think the key over here is he shouldn't see your emotions. I don't think any one of us have reached a stage where we don't feel emotions at all. We will feel emotions to some extent or large extent, depending on the situation. So yes, this is where you count on your support system, on your family, your friends, your coaches, mentors, whoever it is. But I think the other very important thing to keep in mind in this situation is it is not a winning game. So a lot of us, and I used to do that, get stuck into trying to prove ourselves right. The thing is, no matter what you say or do, you will never be able to prove yourself right in front of a narcissist. So it's a lost battle. Don't even bother with it.
That's exactly right. You cannot win. There is no winning because they are incapable of any kind of true empathy, remorse, the same kind of emotional feelings that a neurotypical person has. They don't possess those. So the thing that you are trying to get from them, they don't have. They don't have it to give. It's not like they have it and they refuse to give it. It's that when you're trying to appeal to their compassion or appeal to their sense of decency or morals or any of that, you can't. There's no winning because they are deficient in those areas. They're incapable. It's just not possible. So when you accept that and acknowledge that you cannot win, then you stop fighting and you just accept this person is disordered. This person is mentally unwell, emotionally unwell. They are dysregulated, malignant, pathologically sick. And so I'm arguing with a person like that. Who's silly now? just stop because yeah. There's no purpose to do that. So another thing that we can talk about when you're in these situations is that, to have these, to keep the strong boundaries and to just remove all the drama and, to take the higher ground. And that's really hard to do because they'll just kind of push your buttons and drag you into this thing. It's just really important to show, even though you're feeling like you're dying on the inside, that you show nothing outwardly and that you are not reactionary. If you cannot go no contact. So let me just stress again, if you have any resources, friends or family nearby who can function as that drop-off pickup person and then do emails only for documentation purposes, that is by far 100% the best choice. But some of us do not have those resources at our disposal. And then that's what we're talking about now, about how to employ the gray rock, how to put the boundaries down, how to shield yourself and make just this impenetrable force field between you and that person where no matter how you're feeling, you show nothing and that you are task oriented. Let's stick to the resolving the problem. Or you can say, let's work all of this out before we're in person face to face. I will not do this with you in person. You must email me your visitation requests. And this is assuming that they're not already court ordered. Some people are just separated and don't have a court order. Some people are in the process of disputing a court order. So when you don't have the court order to follow and you're negotiating these visits, just insist on doing all of that negotiation of who has them, what time they're picked up, what time they're brought back, all this documentation, insist that it be done on email. Because if you think about it, there's no reason why you should be negotiating these things in person when you probably need some kind of record of this on paper for documentation for legal purposes later.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you're saying, Prajan, it goes hand in hand with your confidence. When you've lived with a narcissist, your confidence is so affected that sometimes you are not sure of what you're saying, but don't be afraid to say this is how things are going to work. The more fear, if they sense fear in you or confusion or doubt, it's going to feed them and they're going to make it more difficult. So the more confident you appear and the more entitled that this is how things are going to work, that's it. Email me, message me. There's no reason we need to talk. Just email me whatever you need. I think the more confident you appear, the better chances you have of getting to a solution.
Keep it short. Say, I'm sorry, I have to go. I have an appointment. We cannot have this conversation. I have to leave. You have to leave. And it's better if these conversations, if the pickup, if you do not do it at your house, meet them at a fast food restaurant or someplace like that, away from the home. There should not be, when at all possible, there should not be entry to your safe space that you are living in and have created for yourself. They shouldn't be there, period. Yeah. And you can say, when you pick up the children, we need to meet out, in a place where there's people, there's witnesses, there's things going on, and you can move and you can leave quickly. Like, I've got to go. When they're in your house, sometimes it's harder to get them to leave. So you got to pre-plan these strategies, your exit strategies, keep it fast, quick, business-like, to the point, and try to keep the control. Absolutely. Try to be the one who's, at the wheel, so to speak.
Exactly.
So one of the other things I want to touch upon is what you can do for your children, because so far we've been talking about how to navigate what we are experiencing as far as negotiations and contact and agreements about when they see the children and how to share them and how to react to that. And we're talking about it more from the perspective of the parent, their experience with this. But I want to mention something about the children themselves, kind of what to expect with that, because it needs to be said. And I think we have to be realistic. We are the ones that are rooted in reality. They are not. And so in reality, it can go several different ways. If your children are small, it's very difficult to try to do a counter defense, to defend yourself against all of the lies and half-truths and twisted smear campaigns that your co-parent is, actually there is no co-parenting, that the other parent is doing this campaign against you, because they don't want the children to have allegiance or closeness or respect or any of those things for you. And sometimes they will even try to recruit the children to become flying monkeys and tattle on you and tell what you're doing. Like, are you dating anyone? Are you talking to anyone? Who are your friends? Where do you go? What do you do? All those kind of things. They'll quiz them down and use them as spies in your own home. And so the children are victims in this. Hopefully that's not going to stick as a label permanently, but while they are helplessly being shuttled back and forth as minors, they really are victims in this, because they're in something quite dysfunctional. There's no way to make it functional. And of course that's going to have an impact. So in my experience, and according to a lot of the research, and I listened to Dr. Romani last week. Dr. Vaknin is not the only person that I follow his lectures and everything. I was listening to Dr. Romani, and she said that really there's several different possibilities about what will happen as they become adults. And one is that they're going to have a lot of anxiety, confusion, dysregulation. They're going to feel instrumentalized, used by that parent. They're going to need years of therapy to sort it all out. And they're not just going to come out of it unscathed, unharmed. To think that you can protect them and prevent that from happening is magical thinking. There's no way that cannot happen. It's just to be expected that it's going to be difficult for them to sort it all out, and that they will have quite a bit of anxiety and confusion in doing so for a long while, quite possibly. And the other possibility is even harder to think about, but a lot of times they will model that narcissistic parent and become narcissistic themselves. And the only thing to console ourselves when thinking about that is to remember that it's on a spectrum, and all of us have a little bit of narcissism, and that by having a narcissistic parent, it doesn't mean that you're going to go to the deep end and become a pathological, malignant person with personality disorder. It could just mean they have a very heavy, like they're in the middle of the narcissistic spectrum, and they have more narcissism, more trouble with feeling empathy, more trouble feeling positive emotions, more problems understanding positive things and all of that than the average person, but maybe not so far gone they're over there on that other like part of the spectrum that ceases your ability to have a functioning normal life where you can feel and have empathy and have emotions, and those things are just gone. They're just gone. So the other possibility is that they're going to end up somewhere on that spectrum in ways that are more than your average person that grew up with parents who were not narcissists. So when you think about these things for your children, there are things you can do now to lay the foundation for what will follow. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, about what you can do with your children to kind of give them the tools that they're going to need to get through this?
Yeah. As they grow so up? There are three things really that we can do with the kids. But before I talk about this three things, there's one thing I want to say that, you know, some of us, I think I've been at that stage as well, because we've gone through a divorce, because we are co-parenting, and then we are co-parenting with a narcissist. We feel that we are responsible for what our children are going through. Yes, they're going to go through some kind of trauma. They're going to have some challenges because of this situation, but every child has some situation, one situation on another. If not this, it'll be something else. So what I want to say is we cannot protect our children from everything in the world, not let alone this. Yes, we can be mindful, but it's not about keeping our children so safe that they don't understand the world at all. So if anybody's feeling guilty, I would say, I think that's the first thing, stop feeling guilty about it, because we can't protect our children from everything.
That's right.
And then I think from my experience, the three things that I really think helps is love. And I say love, unconditional love. Because like you said, the children are being bounced from one parent to another, not knowing who's right, who's wrong. They don't understand narcissism. They don't understand reality. So they need love, and they need to be told it's nothing to do with them. And it's grown-ups are acting like children, simple. So love is one of the most important things. And to your point, and what Dr. Amani talks about is they can be on the spectrum of narcissism, but the more love we give them, the less likely they're going to be on that spectrum, or at least far end of the spectrum. So love is very important, but also setting boundaries and communication. So when I say boundaries, a lot of the times, because our narcissist co-parent is manipulating the situation, they're manipulating the children, and they are kind of turning, or that's what you feel, that they're turning the children against you. What happens is we go on the other end to try and please the children. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst thing we can do. You know, So whatever the children say happens, whatever they want, they get, just to please them. And I think that is the worst thing we can do to children, because when they grow up, they're going to become entitled. So setting boundaries and making sure that the children know that this is my house. This is how things are going to work in my house. You know, yes, you get to have whatever, you get to have your screen time, but in my house, it's only 2 hours a day. Simple. No matter what your dad says, if you think I'm a bad mother, that's fine, but this is what you get. So don't be afraid of putting boundaries with the children, but make sure you're doing it with love. Please do not forget the love element.
Yes. And they always say when you are telling children that there's something that you don't like, that they need to do differently, they need to come away knowing that it's not them that's bad. It's a specific behavior. So they're not, you don't say, you know, you are a bad son or daughter. You say what you are doing is not okay. You're better than that. Let's not do it. Because this thing is not good, but they are good. And, or you can say, when you do such and such, it makes me feel such and such. And I think it's so important to teach them how to, a couple of things. Number one, how to emotionally regulate their own emotions, because children, their emotions are all over the place. They have trouble enough controlling them anyway, and add this other parent confusing them, adding logs on that flame and just really making things 100 times worse. I think that you have to make an extra effort to be aware that they are having trouble knowing how to manage their emotions, control their emotions. What am I feeling? You don't want them to repress their emotions or to deny their emotions. Like those people who say, you know, you're not hurt, just get up and walk it off. Well, yeah, they are hurt and they need to be comforted for a moment. So to teach them that emotions are to be, to accept their emotions, to name them and to say out loud, I am feeling angry. I am feeling confused. I am feeling frustrated. I am feeling sad. I am feeling lonely. And then together you validate those emotions and tell them it's okay. It's perfectly normal for people to feel those things. Here are some things that you can do to control that, to regulate it, to keep it so that it doesn't just get out of control. Here are some things that we can do to manage our emotions and our feelings. But that whole conversation about feelings and keeping that open and honest and showing them through yourself, like you sit down and maybe cry, or you're angry and you say, I'm feeling, and just say it, I'm feeling very angry, I'm feeling very sad, and I'm going to feel this for a minute and accept it, and it will pass. I'm not fearing it. I'm not holding it in. I'm not ashamed. There is no shame in having feelings. We need to feel them and say what they are and experience them. And then, you know, that's the healthy thing to do. So I think that we have to teach that to children anyway. And when one parent is impaired, one parent is mentally ill and incapable of having any kind of regular normal feelings, then the whole responsibility is upon us to help that child with naming those feelings and not feeling ashamed to have the feelings and learning how to manage their feelings. It's an ongoing thing. And also the empathy and compassion thing. I think there should be daily lessons where you talk about it, you see it, you observe it, you model it to them. Like, I'm feeling empathy for this. I'm seeing this thing on the news. Did you hear about this other thing? It breaks my heart. Or maybe even stop and say prayers for those people, or have like silent meditation for those people. I remember I had my daughter with me when 9/11 happened. Probably you're so young you don't remember, or maybe you weren't even here yet, but when 9/11 happened, 2001, right? I wanted, the feelings were just overwhelming, and I had held them together all day because I'm a high school teacher, and I had been with those students, and we were all trying to process what was happening together. But when I got to her, I had been the strong one all day. I just burst into tears. And I said, I don't know what to do, and I don't know how to feel about this, except I'm so heartbroken that all of those lives were lost in an instant. And so we drove to a church, and there were hundreds of people in that church on their knees crying and praying. And I remember we went there, and she saw me get down on my knees and cry and pray, because I didn't know what else to do. And I think we need to show our children those moments when we are vulnerable, where we are embracing our feelings and surrendering to them and honoring them and telling them it's good to feel suffering and pain for other people's suffering and pain. That's what we're supposed to do. It should hurt us, just hurt us. Drive us to tears and bring us to our knees when we see someone else suffer. That's part of being human. We're all connected, and when one person is injured, we're all injured. And use things that are happening now with the wars and with the, this is what is happening in the world today with, shootings and just all of, there's so many opportunities to teach empathy to your children, to show them that we are all hurt when other people are hurt. That's so important because the narcissist can't teach that, can't show that, and does not feel that.
And this is, I think, so if I can kind of bring this back together, we spoke about gray rock. So when you're dealing with your co-parent, narcissist parent, you're trying to be the gray rock, not showing your emotions. On the other hand, when you're dealing with your children, you have to show your emotions. They need to feel more human-like. So all of this requires a lot of self-awareness and a lot of work that you do on yourself, because till the time you are not emotionally secure, till the time you don't know how to handle your emotions, you cannot teach your child, or the child will not see you and learn. So what I'm going to try is, when you if you to try to bring it all together, is a lot of this depends on you. You have to become, and you'll have to do this inner work. Unfortunately, you are in this situation, and I'm sorry to say this, but when if you have a narcissist in your life, or you had a narcissist in your life, the chances are that your self-worth was already very low. And the reason you are in this situation is because this is your opportunity to work on yourself so that you can show your children a better way to live, so that they don't follow the same path that you did.
That's exactly right, and that's a very, very good point. And it's hard to do, and you're doing it alone, which is also very hard to do. It's important that you take care of yourself first. What do they say on an airplane? Put your oxygen on first, and then help others. Because if you try to help them first, you're going to pass out. You're going to be unconscious, and you're not going to be helpful to anyone. You might even die. And so you have to take care of yourself first. And that sounds selfish, but it's not. You have to get yourself together. And let me say, that is no easy task. I work with clients who are, you say, 8 years for you since you were, married with your spouse. Some people, it's longer than that, 10 years, 12 years. They're still struggling to recover, to just totally be free of it and to heal themselves and not feel that there are pieces that are broken, jagged, sharp little broken pieces still inside them after a decade. And I just want to say, everybody has to heal their own speed, and you need to give yourself grace, forgiveness, and support to do this on your own time. It has been a, you have been existentially annihilated. You have been gutted as if you were cut open and just hollowed out and left for dead. You have been, what has happened here is nothing like a regular divorce. It's nothing like regular co-parenting with a divorced partner. It is not that. It is a completely different thing. And it's going to require continued care now that you pull yourself together as best you can for the children. And even as they become adults, hopefully you have given them the tools to recognize their feelings, to embrace those feelings, and to have feelings for other people so that they can go out and get the you know, continue the conversation with a therapist or to continue the journey to try to be healthy. Because I think children at some point get old enough to understand there's something wrong with this person. And even if they have sort of become narcissistic themselves, they can see that they're different from everyone else. They can see that this is a problem. So hopefully that will not be the outcome. Hopefully they will manage to benefit from what you can do for them and with them and this love that you show them unconditionally. Hopefully what you model and show them to teach them will be enough to protect them from going all the way over to the empty side, to the hollow side of this. Hopefully it will be enough. And that's not to say they won't have things that they're going to have to examine and deal with, because I believe they will have to. But hopefully if you give them all the tools to help them do that, they will continue on that journey, and they will know what this other thing is, and they will maintain enough emotional health to avoid that.
Yeah, there's a saying that pain travels through generations. And like you said, the chances are that a narcissist already has narcissistic parents, or somebody in the family is a narcissist and they've kind of picked it up, and that's how they are on this path. This is, I think this is, it is like you said, it's not an easy journey, but this is a way for us to stop this generational pain, or at least minimize the generational pain. And although you are not a narcissist, although you can't control what the other person is doing to our children, you do have a lot more that you can give to your children and try and stop this generational pain that is traveling.
Yes, and in relation to what you're saying, I know that there may be people listening who are not on the journey towards health and wellness and wholeness from this narcissistic experience. And they're thinking, you know, just because it happened to us and to probably millions of others, doesn't make us an authority. Who are we to be talking about this? And who are we to be trying to go out and educate the world about this? But I will tell you, there are many mental health professionals, therapists, and so on and so forth out there who do not have the depth of understanding of what this is and what it does. It is a niche area that is a specialized area for just a very narrow swath of treatment or whatever. When you're looking for a provider to help you have therapy for recovery, and you, not every mental health professional has been trained or who has had the experience or has done the research or whatever is required to be able to be knowledgeable about this. When this happened to us, most of us dug in, rolled our sleeves up, and wanted to understand, what is this? What has just happened here? Because it's not normal. It is not your average grief and divorce and recovery. This is not that. This is something else. And by the time we come out on the other side of all of that reading and research and study, you know, we should have a degree in narcissistic abuse recovery, because we do know We've heard every lecture, we've read every book, we've read all the studies, we've studied it so deeply and spent so much time seeking answers, seeking to make sense of it. And I do believe that gives us an edge, that we can speak to this in ways that others cannot, and take our newfound training and knowledge and certifications and all of that to go out and broadcast to the world what is happening here, because it is increasing. We live in a culture that rewards narcissism and is ruthless and all about winning and is lacking empathy and compassion and mercy and all of that, you know, just greedy and horrible. And we see it more and more through our leaders, through our politicians, through our, on a global scale. I think a lot of them, the people that are in charge, who have power, have risen through the ranks because they are narcissists or psychopaths or sociopaths. And there are many others who know this cluster B disorder who agree with that statement. And so when we live in a world that glorifies it and supports it, it's going to increase. There's going to be more. And so for that reason, people should listen to us. We're sounding the alarm. We are signaling this is a growing problem. We are trying to warn people that this is not isolated. The statistics you read, some of them 1 or 2%, some of them say 5 to 8% of the population have a cluster B disorder. I'm sorry, but how would you gather those statistics with any kind of fidelity or accuracy when most people who are psychopathic, narcissistic, sociopaths, they don't go in for treatment or assessment. They're hiding under the rock. They are rising to power on the backs of the vulnerable and the weak. They are taking over the world and they are undiagnosed. So I just want to say, for anyone being dismissive or wanting to minimize all this and say, look at these two women just talking about that like they know something. We do know something, and we have a message, and we have a warning, and we are the harbingers of the what's coming in the future, to warn the coming people that this is something that you need to be aware of. You need to educate yourself. You need to not just read some pop psychology Instagram meme or something about narcissist. I mean, people use that word so much these days. Everybody's a narcissist and everybody has trauma and everybody's trauma bonded. These are the pop terms that everybody has grabbed onto. And I just hate it because they don't understand what that really means. They just know that everybody's saying it. Everybody's got trauma. Everybody's a narcissist. They have no idea. And I want them to understand it and to know what to do, especially if they have children with people who have this disorder. What do you do? How do you minimize the damage as much as possible? What things do you need to be doing for your children to increase their chances of stopping the generational trauma?
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing. We're stopping that cycle and saying it is not okay. It's not okay to be that. It would make the world a better place, right? So, Shama, can you tell us a little bit about how we can reach you, any final words you want to sum up with, and how to contact you, what you can do as far as working with people? Want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, sure. I think I just want to summarize by saying we've spoken a lot about everything that needs to be done. And to your point, we've felt the pain. We've been there. We've done that. We've overcome it. We've healed ourselves, which is why we are here to help you, because we understand and we can help. But just to summarize, you don't have to do this by yourself, because like fragile like you and me. There are others who have gone through this. There are other coaches, there are mentors, there's therapy out there. You know, people have gone through this. You don't have to start from scratch. You can fast track your healing journey if you've gone through something similar or you are going through something similar. Don't feel the need to do it by yourself, because the power of the support and the group and the tribe, what we call, is amazing. You'd be surprised as how quickly you can heal and overcome and get used to dealing with somebody like that very easily. So please do not try to do this by yourself. Please seek support. Whoever it might be, please seek support. And to that point, I'm here to help. If you would like to reach out to me, you can go on my website. It's called coachshama.com. Again, my name is not easy, so I know, Prajan, you're going to put it in the notes. please try and find me. You can. I'm offering a free discovery call. So if you would just like to have a conversation with me for free, one-to-one conversation, then there'll be a link to book a free call with me, a free discovery call. Please feel free to do so. If there's any way I can help people going through the same journey that I've been through, then it will be my pleasure.
Thank you so much for saying that. And I think all of us who are doing this work have that same feeling about it. And, you know, we are here to help. And, you know, there's a huge number of people doing it. The cost that you can buy thousands of dollars programs. You can do things for a very nominal fee. And some of it is even free. I know that, you know, I have a day job. I'm a teacher, a high school teacher, and that's how I pay my bills. The work that I do for this is just trickle income. It's not, it barely pays to keep my website going and to get all this out to people. And, you know, it's not about, this is our business, and that we're trying to, you know, earn a living on, you know, the suffering of others. This is service. This is empathy for others suffering, and that we don't want anyone to languish and be stuck in a place of pain and confusion and suffering, not understanding what has just happened. We're here to help decipher that and to dissect it and to show you what has just happened and why it's not your fault and what you can do moving forward. We don't want to stay victims. Maybe we were victimized, but I don't want to be a victim. I don't want that to be my identity, how I define myself. I'm not a victim. I was victimized. I have had to do some work to prevent that from happening again. But I think our goal is to recover and to stop suffering and to put our lives back together. And if we have children, to help them to move forward in the best way possible to stop this.
Yeah. And so, I think most people would not like to hear this, but this is actually our opportunity to grow. We've been given the opportunity to heal ourselves. So it's more than just being the victim. It's about, oh, wow, I've got this opportunity. I know it's very hard. I know but it is an opportunity.
No, in the beginning, when people said that to me, the first year or even the first 2 years, I just wanted to strangle them. I thought, Stop saying that. I don't want this opportunity. I want to live in that fantasy bubble with that person in denial, in some kind of mutual psychosis. That was fun. That was easy. That was better. I liked that. Let's go back there, because the real world is very scary and ugly right now. I'd rather be in that fantasy. Yes, take me back there. And I didn't want the opportunity. It's like, no, take it away. I don't want that opportunity. But now, almost 5 years later, I do see it as an opportunity. And absolutely. And you may not be at a place today where you can feel good about that or even accept it and say, okay, you know, maybe it is. But I believe you will come to that place eventually. I didn't think I ever would, but here I am. Yes, it was an opportunity.
Absolutely.
So, Tama, thank you so much for being here and for talking about co-parenting. I'm going to put all of your information in the description below So I hope y'all will check that out. And whether you come to me, to her, or whomever, it doesn't matter. What does matter is that you build your support network, your tribe of people who speak the same language, and that you learn the truth about narcissistic personality disorders so that you can understand what they are, why you were in that, why you stayed in it, and how to get out of it and stay out of it. That's the important part. Okay. Well, thank you for being here. And maybe we will talk again and in the future more about this co-parenting thing and check in with each other and see how everybody's doing. Until then, everyone, be safe and take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.
Okay.